Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and live from Myrtle Beach in Studio City, California, Emerald Isle Island, North Carolina, and of course, Atlanta, Georgia. Tonight, we have a very, very special time to speak with Miss Diane Pope of the Tams, the great R&B singing group that basically created R&B and pop music history. They began in the in the early 60s. The boys in the band were friends before then, and we got a lot of stories to tell, a lot of memories to remind ourselves up. First of all, I want to welcome my hosts, Eli Watson from Studio City. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm ready for this interview, man.
I'm glad you are. This is not a California gig. This is Atlanta, Georgia. So get ready. And of course, none other than the great actor, wrestler, all around good friend, and star of the Dusk series, which is now all over. Papa Stro, the maestro of wrestling. Stro, how are you doing tonight?
Great to be here with you all, and I'm very excited about this interview with Diane, for sure. I used to live in Atlanta, and I'm definitely a fan of the Tam. So,
that's great. Yeah, you lived a lot of great places, and when you were a professional wrestler, I know you spent some of your time down there. So that's great. I'm sure you've heard them and heard a lot about them. So here we are tonight with one of my oldest friends, not oldest in terms of how old we are, but one of my longest running friends and one of the best people in the music business. So Diane, how is everything as you are under quarantine at your home in Atlanta?
Yes. Yep. We're staying at home. We're trying to do what the president said.
Well, I hope that we all kind of stay healthy and we don't get sick. And as I say, the dog died and the cat ran away. We want everyone to be well and stay safe during these very, very strange and difficult times. I know I was on the road today coming back from Columbia, and it was like a ghost town on the interstate, just absolutely as quiet as it could be. So glad to be back here in Myrtle Beach and excited to be here with some really great friends. So now, Diane, you were married to Charles Pope of the Tams, one of the two lead singers. The other lead singer being his brother Joe. And
who loved wrestling.
Out, do what?
Joe Pope loved wrestling. Ric Flair and all them were his friends.
All right.
I don't doubt it. That's right. We talked about that.
Yeah.
Did they go? I bet they hung out some, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, and Rick used to come to their shows. I mean, there was a lot of them. Abdul the Butcher, that's telling how old I am. This is back in the day. Tony Atlas, a whole bunch of them. So I remember them.
That's awesome.
Papa Stro, those are your buddies, because you've told me
pretty much
stories about them. That's right. And now, one thing I got to ask you. Diane, do you happen to remember the name of a guy, one of two guys, either Dusty Rhodes or Terry Funk? Do you remember either
yes,
one of
yes,
those
yes,
guys?
Yes. They love Dusty Rhodes now. He was one of their favorite.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now, Papa Stro, we're going to have to – would you mind in a little bit treating Diane to one of your best Dusty Rhodes stories?
be an honor. That'd be great. Thanks.
Absolutely. All right, so to get down to how do I know Diane and everything, well, we both had a mutual friend. He was a booking agent and an impresario, Harry Turner, from Newberry, South Carolina. He really got around in the beach music crowd. And he told me Diane and Charles wanted to meet me. I was doing some website development, things like that, and I said, well, where do I get to go meet them? This will be one of my biggest days ever. I said, I want you to come down to the Three Rivers Music Festival in Columbia, South Carolina. Tams are headlining. I said, well, great. So I came down there, and it was – now, Diane, if you remember, it was a dark and stormy day. Oh,
yes, it
Lord.
Was.
And I just knew, I just kept looking up and praying, but I had a feeling prayers weren't going to do any good. This one was already set. We just had downpour after downpour. But the Tams did go on and got to play a little bit. They didn't get to I don't think they got to do everything, but the people loved them. In the rain, the park, and other things, the people loved the Tams. So now, Diane, you...
Yes.
You are originally from Columbia, South Carolina. Is that right?
No. I'm originally from China Grove, North Carolina.
Oh, that's right. China Grove. Oh, you got some contacts in Columbia, too, if I remember correctly.
I hate them contacts. You talking about Captain Snipes?
The captain. Okay. We may mention Captain Snipes later. But anyway, so how did you meet Charles? And how did you ultimately get involved with your friendship with the Tams?
I met the Tams in Charlotte, North Carolina, in the early 60s. What Kind of Fool, I think, was the hit then. Was it What Kind of Fool Do You Think I Am was their hit then. I think it was like in around 64. And we went to Park Center. And I had a date, and that's where I met the Tams. That's the first time I met Charles.
About right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were always going to see the Tams because their songs, we loved them.
Absolutely.
And that's where I met them.
Now, you had a couple of friends that you kind of always hung out with and went to see them, correct?
Yes.
Wasn't there a lady named Jane?
A friend of mine named Buzz Sawyer and my cousin Cynthia and all of us, we all went to see the Tams. Betsy.
That's right. When did you first get to meet any of the Tams? Because I know you were married originally to Al Cottle.
Correct.
Cottle, and then you ended up getting married to Charles, and that lasted. I'm sorry.
I was married to Albert Cottle. He was one of the Tams back then. He was kind of. A bad boy, as they call it. It seems like all the young girls like bad boys first, but Charles was very laid back, and he was so nice. He was a gentleman. And so that's how I met them all. I mean, you know, we became friends, and we went to see them all the time. And then Al and I got together, and I moved to Atlanta, and we got married in 1967, which you couldn't marry back in those days. Blacks and whites could not marry. And we got married in 1967.
Wow.
Okay, and then I guess you stayed in Atlanta
on the road
with them while they toured, right?
Well, I went on the road with them a lot, but I started working at IBM, and I worked for IBM for 32 years, so I only went, like, when I could.
Right. And then after that, because you've got so many great stories, you were then married. Now, I can tell everybody, Charles Pope was one of the nicest people I ever met. In the number of times that I've stayed at your house, he and I would sit up late and talk. And I got to hear some great stories. He knew absolutely everybody that was a star in the music business.
Yes, he did.
From Little Richard to Aretha Franklin to the whole bunch. And I've met a number of those folks, actually, through Harry Turner. And they all really spoke very highly of Charles, your husband. And so after they had a couple of smash hits. It was the one that I think most people know is Be Young, Be Foolish, Be Happy. And then What Kind of Fool Do You Think I Am? And I've Been Hurt. And then, of course, my favorite, which is... Hey Girl, Don't Bother Me, which that was kind of a surprise number one hit, wasn't it, Diane? Hey Girl.
Yes. A DJ or a disc jockey picked it up in the UK it became a number one hit in the UK in 1971. And Maggie May knocked it out of first place with Rod Stewart. They played it Tops of the Pops in 1971.
Right, Tops of the Pops. It's a show that still goes on today, and they have the top – whoever's got the number one, number two, or number three song on the charts in England, they have them there live playing. The Tams went over there. I mean, they had their red and black outfits and their Tams on, and they people went crazy over them, didn't they?
They did. They stayed over there for about 41 days.
Wow, let's all go back. And they got those incredible hats. What would you say? Getting back to those hats, because that's why they're called the Tams. How did that happen? How did that name and that gimmick? We call it in wrestling a gimmick. How did that happen?
Well, as the story goes, back then they were really poor, and they were, you know, used to sing on the street corners of Auburn Avenue around Atlanta, and they didn't have money to buy uniforms. So one of the guys that was around them, I think it was Willie Rutherford, he suggested that they wear hats. They put on some, I think, sweaters, as my husband said, and you know, dress pants, and they had those Tams on their head. And once they signed with Bill Lowry, Bill Lowry liked the name, and so it stuck.
Right, and Bill Lowry, for quite a while, produced the Tams records, correct?
Correct. He was their manager, yes. He's the one signed them. He's the one got them all the record deals. He's the one took their money, too.
as a buddy of mine, Bill Kennedy said, they used to call Bill Lowry "Watch Your Back, Bill," because if you weren't careful, he would be in your wallet. Oh yeah,
yeah.
He was.
They never got any royalties till maybe the last 20 years.
Oh wow!
When they had hit records, they got no royalties.
And that's something that a lot of people don't know about. That's the way a large sector of the music industry was. I know our friend Maurice Williams did not have to go through that. He wrote and he sang, and yeah, exactly. So anyway, it was very tough growing up, but they performed on the road and people just absolutely loved them. I would beg to say that they were most popular during that Carolina Beach music era in Myrtle Beach, but in the, you know, between 65 and 80. Wouldn't you say that was the biggest heyday of their live performances?
Yes. They used to work about 300 days a year. I never saw them. They were gone so much.
Yep. Well, you know, they were out there.
We're
doing
still
well.
Working, though. We work about 100 days a year now. We don't want to work. My son, since he took over the Tams, he's been out there since he was 6 years old. And he is now 50 years old, and he's been out there for 44 years. And he only wants 100 days a year.
Are you serious? Little Red is 50 years old?
Yeah, he don't look it, but he is.
No, he doesn't. That's great. I'll take his 50 every day. So he started. Tell us how he started. He went on stage, and yeah, you know the story.
Well, the first night he started in Myrtle Beach at the Admiral Showrooms at the Holiday Inn in Myrtle Beach. And Joe called him, and Joe told him, "I'm going to let you sing," and, you know, he gave him the microphone to do Be Young, and I think my son, as I was there, remember he messed up. So Joe told him, "When we come back on the show, I'm going to give you one more chance, and if you mess up, that's going to be it for you." So when he came back on stage, he gave him the microphone, and he sang, and he killed it. So he's been there ever since.
And he is still killing it. I think Little Red, your son, Al Cottle Jr., is one of the most popular people on the R&B circuit in the Southeast. People do love him. He can dance like a genius, can't he?
Yeah, he can. He's a great performer and a singer. He never got his dues to me, but, you know, he wasn't really trying to go anywhere from the Tams. He just loved, you know, singing with the Tams.
Well, there's nothing better than singing with the Tams, I'll tell you that. Now, here's a personal history question I want to ask you, and I hope the answer is yes. Do you remember when I was down there one time and you pulled out an old LP? It was one that Little Red had cut.
Yes, at RCA.
Yes. Do you still have that?
Yes.
Thank you very much, because there are two songs on there I want to get a recording of when I come down. Those are you know the ones. Those are some of the best songs, and that should have been that should have been his debut album with RCA, and just, I guess, everything.
It should have been. But
yeah,
they, I think they kind of, all the people that signed him to RCA, I heard they got fired, and he just got lost in the shuffle. So after that, he just kind of lost interest. So that's why he's just,
and
know,
he gained interest
TAMS.
In the TAMS, which was great. Now, I like to ask, I'm going to ask you some stories that we've talked about, if you don't mind telling them, and then I'm going to get Maestro to tell you. It's my favorite Dusty Rhodes story, and I don't think he has to even ask which one it is, since he was since the TAMS were friends of these great wrestlers. I think you'll enjoy this. But tell us some of the most memorable stories that you have about being in and around with the TAMS. I think everybody listening to this would really love to hear those.
Well, my first story is memorable, but I hate it. When we, the TAMS had broke down on the side of the road, and they were going to Columbia, South Carolina to perform. And I think it was at the Whiskey A Go-Go or something like that. And so we took the TAMS on, and the rest of them got a rental car and came on. But I was not going to Columbia. We were going home. I was going home to see my parents. And when they broke down, we took them on there. And so we spent the night, and Captain Snipes, there was a girl that went with Sonny Key, who was one of the TAMS, and he brought a white girl back to the hotel, and she called the police, and they locked all of us up. And my father came and got me. That was a terrible story. That's why I said I don't like Captain Snipes.
Well, that's all right. We'll make sure he gets recorded properly in the book, won't we?
Yes.
And then there's another even more deeper and meaningful story, and I have researched this, and I can say with absolute authority, it was because of the TAMS, their demeanor, their professionalism, and as great people, they were responsible for the integration of hotels in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Right, Diane?
You're right. They were, first they were looking for, I guess, a hotel to stay at. Sometime we stayed on the Atlantic Beach. It was called the Black Beach then. And they stayed at a little hotel, and I can't remember the name of it. John, I think my husband told you all about it. It was off of 17,
I
believe it was.
I think I've got it in my notes.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. And then the man said their money's just as good as anybody else's money. And so that was the first time that some black artists stayed at a white motel. It was a motel, I think it was. And I think when some of the guys wanted to go swimming, he said, sure, go swimming. And when they went in the pool, all the white people came out of the pool. And, I mean, from then on, they were playing at the beach club. I think Cecil Corbin owned the beach club then.
Corbin owned it.
In fact, they went to his house and ate dinner with him.
Right. The beach club was probably the equivalent
of the biggest thing on the beach.
Right. The Mercury Ballroom in New York or anything. It was. And he had them booked. From what I heard, there were a number of dates the TAMS had for Myrtle Beach, and club owners would jockey around and try to get them and pay each other a little extra money because the TAMS would always fill the place up.
Right. When they would lose money with other artists, they always called, and this is what Bill Lowry always said, they always called him to juggle bringing the TAMS back so they could make their money back. That's a true story.
Absolutely. And by the way, for people that don't know exactly who Bill Lowry is, he did have another gigantic hit that he produced called Key Largo, and that was
right,
his artist.
The movie.
Yeah, and the song and the theme song. Oh my God! And it was huge. And I can't remember the name of the artist. I'll find it in just a minute. But you know, he never remembered getting any money from that either.
Bill Lowry had all kinds of artists. He had Brenda Lee. He had Tommy Rose. He had the Dennis Yost and the Classic Four. He had I can't even remember. He had what's his name? It had he had Joe South. He had all kinds. Everybody. He had
right,
what's the singer that did my grandma got run over by a raindrop. Ray Stevens. He had all those people.
Yeah, he was their producer and
manager.
I have exactly. Well, I tell you what, he also, if we don't mind talking about this, there are two great, great songwriters that he was involved with. One was Ray Whitley.
Correct.
Right?
He wrote all the Tams hits.
And can you kind of like tell everybody, it ends up being a bit of a sad story about Ray Whitley, doesn't it?
Yes. Ray Whitley wrote What Kind of Fool, Be Young, Hey Girl, you name it, he wrote it. And he wrote most of the Tams hits, but he ended up losing all of his publishing. And his sister and him told me this, that Bill Lowry took all of his publishing. And one time we went by Lowry's studio, and my husband said, that looks like Ray Whitley out there cutting the grass. And he was cutting the grass, and I heard that Bill was paying his hotel. He was staying in a motel, and he really died homeless. That was sad, all the hits he wrote.
Are any of his daughters or anything still alive?
I think he has a son still alive.
Okay, well, maybe we can, maybe we can
he
talk to
him. He has a sister
him.
Here. He has a sister, too, here. In
oh,
fact,
okay,
I have
great.
Her number. I have her number.
Okay, good. All right, Maestro and Eli, you can tell this is old home week. It's like we got to get in touch with these people. It's great. So now, Diane, you've been wonderful to tell these stories. I would like to turn the podium over to Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, to tell you a Dusty Rhodes story, because Dusty Rhodes truly was the inspiration for professional wrestling, along with Gorgeous George, who is Papa Stro's great uncle. They, I believe, were responsible for putting together and guiding professional wrestling to where it is today, which is a multi-billion-dollar corporation. And so, Papa Stro, do you have one of my favorite Dusty Rhodes stories that you could share with Diane Pope, please?
Oh God, I got so many I could share. I'll give you this one. Okay. One time I was doing an event with Dusty Piper, Roddy Piper was there. Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. I think JYD. Kamala was there, and the whole it was like a stacked card, right? And one of the wrestlers was late getting to the town, and
this is the
it
show.
Just so happened I had his number, right? So I figured I'd give him a call and impersonate Dusty Rhodes' voice on the phone, right?
Well, of course.
So he answers the phone, and I'm like, brother, where you been, baby? You late for the town. You're holding up progress. Hurry up. What you doing, right? And he's like, I'm going as fast as I can, Dusty. My flight was late, and I'm hauling butt down the road to get there. Right? Well, hurry up right now. Hurry up. Get here, you know. Thanks for the phone, right? So he gets to the building, and rushes to the locker room. He rushes by us, and we're trying to keep our composure, right? and then he goes over to Dusty, right, grabs his leg like he's on his hands and knees, saying, Dusty, I'm sorry, I'm late, I'm sorry, like, please forgive me, Dusty, right? And Dusty's looking down at him, shaking his head, goes, what is wrong with you? You acting cuckoo, baby.
I love Dusty. I love to hear him talk.
Oh, he's great. Oh, God.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, he really helped me out when I started, pro wrestling.
He did
quite a bit, and he had a big influence on me.
Well, Ricky downstairs, Joe Polk's son. He watches wrestling anytime it comes on.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wrestling fool. He was Joe Polk's son. them two love wrestling.
That's awesome.
Well, you know, Diane, I like the fact you pronounce the word correctly. It's not wrestling. It's wrestling if you're from Atlanta, correct?
I got that southern twang.
That's exactly right. It is wrestling, so yeah. All right, well, Papa Stro, I might ask you to tell Diane another story because I think I'm the biggest fan in the world of your stories, and I am. So you got one more for now, and then we're going to save the San Francisco Cow Palace story for later. Is that okay?
Oh, okay. That's great. That's great.
Yeah, that will be the crowning jewel of tonight's stories from Papa Stro. But if you got another, Dusty, we'd love to have it.
Well, I know, Diane, you mentioned about Abdul the Butcher, which I've known for many years. I went to his Abdullah House of Ribs restaurant, actually. I think
oh,
it was
okay,
around
yeah.
that. Yeah, and oh, so good. And Tony Atlas, I've had some great matches with him over the years. He's one of the all-time best.
What happened to him?
He's still around. He's up north now. He's had his gym up north now, everything, and he still looks fantastic.
he used to live in my apartment complex, and he bought my daughter's tennis shoes one time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, great guy Tony is. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another Dusty story. Okay, let's see. All right, this is the time I met Andre the Giant for the first time, right? And this was down in Florida, right? I was seeing my uncle and Aunt B down in Florida and going to one of the wrestling shows, and Dusty Rhodes was on the show and everything. I was going to see him originally. And Andre pulls up in the parking lot with his head above the car door, right? And he just got upset for betraying the Bionic Bigfoot on the $6 Million Man series, if you remember that series with Lee Majors.
I do.
And he's getting out of the car, and he's walking towards me, and I am so scared. I'm petrified. I can't move, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time in my life I thought I was that low in the food chain. Right. And Dusty comes up, breaks the ice. At the time, I thought he saved my life, but he comes over to me and said, "Hey, kid, don't worry about a thing, baby. Andre's cool. Say hello to him, Andre." Right? And Andre takes his big paw down to me, looks down, and says, "How do you do?" Right? And I'm looking up at him, and I was like, "Fine, sir. How are you?" Right? And I went to shake his hand, and my hand disappears because his hand's like,
I bet it did.
But I said, at the time, I thought Dusty saved my life. But like I mentioned earlier, Dusty's been like really influential, like since I was a youngin' up to now and everything. So, Dusty's will always hold a special place in my heart.
So, is Dusty still alive?
On the phone.
Now, he passed away a few years ago.
Oh, he
unfortunately.
Did?
Unfortunately.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I loved him.
Yeah.
Well, he was one of my favorite wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Tony Atlas was back then because all the women loved Tony.
Right, yeah.
Tony always looked good without clothes on, though. He never looked good in a suit.
Right,
what I mean is them little pantsy suits, as I remember him when he came over to my house before, because he's been to our house a lot of times. And he, mm-hmm. when he had on a suit, the suit just didn't fit him because he had such big shoulders and stuff.
Right. He still looks great.
Yeah. He was a nice looking guy.
He's got arms like Cannonball.
Yes.
I'm sorry. This is too funny. This is like the most priceless interchange in history on internet radio right now, and you just got it with Tony Atlas, Papa Stro, and Diane Pope. And all right, well, I've got a story, and Diane's going to laugh herself silly when I tell this story. It was the first because I was trying to get going on this book. And so Diane said, John, you can just come on down to our house and just stay there and just work. That's fine. And I thought, well, you know, how nice. I mean, you don't meet too many international superstar families that'll just say, come on down. And, I mean, of course, they are the nicest people. So I pulled up to this palace. Now, it is a,
yeah, right,
a palace, Diane. Well, now, I don't know, but it's pretty nice, I think. So I pulled up, and I start knocking on the door, and then I think Charles came to the door. He said, John, it's good to see you. I said, yeah, thanks. I'm glad to be here. So what happens? I go up the stairs to the living room, and we sit down for a minute, and we're talking, and the conversation, it kind of gets quiet for a minute, and I looked up on the mantle. And I saw something that looked like a Grammy Award.
Mad daughter.
I said, well, I know now. No. Let me get to this. Okay, so first of all, everybody needs to realize I don't have television. Everything that, if I know it and like it, it came from 20 years back, okay? And so I get up there, and I go up there and looking at this thing, and the first thing I did, and Diane, I don't know if you'll remember this or not, but I picked it up. And it was heavy as all get out. I thought, this is,
yeah, it is
very. I said, this is very interesting for a copy of a Grammy. And then I read the thing. Now, this is the whole story. So I read the story. It says, Best R&B Song to Mika Cottle, No Scrubs, 1999. And I almost had a stroke. And I said, that little girl, oh, my God, she wrote the song that TLC sang.
Yeah.
And I just, I mean, honestly, I almost dropped the thing. I fumbled with it a little bit. I got it back up there. And then I realized, I said, oh, my goodness. What was the story? Charles got to Mika, his beautiful daughter, your beautiful daughter. He got her out of dancing, and he got her into being a singer. You got that story. You got that statement that he said to her. I know you remember it.
Yeah, he always said, you can't make no money dancing, because she loved to dance. So he put her in voice lessons at Spelman College, but she was, you know, just 14 or 15 years old. And he put her in voice lessons. Miss Brailford at Spelman College was her voice teacher. He took her two times a week, and she could sing already, but he wanted her in voice lessons. And so after that, that's when she joined the group, and they became the group called Escape. And then her and Candy, one of the girls from the Escape girls, they wrote together. They were writing songs, and they wrote No Scrubs. They were going to do the song themselves because they were going to record it themselves, which they did. And if you ever hear No Scrubs and you hear the background, that's them singing background. TLC never changed the background. A lot of people don't know that, but that's my daughter and Candy singing background.
And what you've got, first of all, the girl supergroup Escape, which was discovered by Jermaine Dupri.
Correct.
They had four platinum albums over a period of 2 years, which is
three.
I think that's over three years.
Yeah, they had three platinum albums. Then they broke up, and now they're back together. And they were touring last year. They did a tour last year, which was very successful. Probably more money than they've ever made last year.
I mean, what a great family, the Charles Pope family. I mean, you know, the Tams, and by the way, if you don't mind sharing with everybody,
who she's married to?
Tamika married a guy who was a little bit on the famous side.
She's married to T.I. When she married him, he wasn't famous, though. He was just starting out.
He was just a cool dude when she married him, right?
Yeah. She met him in the, I think she met him at Lenox Square in the mall. She thought he was too young for her because he's really 4 years younger than her. But they're married. They have three children. With all their children, they have seven. Because she had one child when she married T.I. And so that makes four, and he had three other ones before he met her. Seven kids. They're wonderful kids, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget a couple times that T.I. will come mm-hmm. busting in the guest room and say, I want to hear a ghost story. He wants me to tell him a ghost story. It's great. Well, I got a lot more ghost stories now. And I will say this. He was just standing outside your house one time, and he said, look at this. And he showed me this gigantic band trailer. It was beautiful. You know, it was like sleek, black. Tams could put stuff in there. He said, the Tams needed that. They're great. And he stood there and told me that. And you know what? He's right. The Tams are absolutely great. And they got some of the best hits. Now, by the way, and I know this is just news and views time, I have been trying to get a hold of Ian Levine, the guy that reproduced all those Northern Soul songs. I'm friends with him on Facebook. I'm trying to get a hold of him. He and I used to talk, but if I can't get a hold of him directly through Facebook, I've got a couple people that I'm probably getting a hold of him through Ollie Murs, and who only had five number one songs in America, thanks to American Idol, or Steve Brookstein. Steve said he would try to help me get a hold of Ian. So we're going to see if we can get a hold of Ian and kind of have a – because he loves – oh, my God, he loves the Tams.
Well, he needs to get us overseas.
That's exactly right. And let's see, I've got my little notes here. Now, Papa Stro, the maestro of wrestling, you have the two funniest stories are left. And one has to do with South Carolina, good Lord. One has to do with the San Francisco Cow Palace with Terry Funk, your uncle, your adopted uncle, and he's a great guy. And Diane, I can guarantee you, if you hung out with these guys, you hung out with Terry Funk. He was a scrappy little dude, and Papa Stro, he was pretty tough, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, one of the toughest times. Oh, gosh. And it took him forever to retire.
Can you tell Diane this story, please?
Oh, sure. Uncle Terry, yeah. Matter of fact, he'll still go every now and then. One time we were at the Cow Palace in San Francisco for a pay-per-view called Super Brawl that WCW was putting on. And earlier today we were shooting promos to set up for the show that night. And I was waiting to do my promo on the segment I had with Ernest the Cat Miller. And matter of fact, later on that night, James Brown, the Godfather of Soul, made an appearance, which was pretty amazing. But Terry Funk had a promo about his match that night with Ric Flair. And ironically enough, you know, we were talking about Dusty Rhodes earlier. Dustin Rhodes, his son, was there next to him doing the promo, right? And he had this trash bag in his head, and everybody kept asking Terry, Terry, what's in this trash bag? And he would give everybody the same response. He says, I'm saving it for the interview, right? So the camera starts, right? He reaches in his bag, pulls out this rancid dead chicken with feathers all over it that supposedly he got from his ranch in Texas. I really don't know how he got the darn thing on the plane, right? But he takes the chicken
but he did.
To the camera, and he says, you see this chicken? I shall compare its anatomy to that of one Ric Flair. See these skinny legs? These are the legs of Ric Flair. See this beak? This is the schnoz of Ric Flair. And I'm going to take Ric Flair by the neck. And he's grabbing the chicken as he's saying this, right? And I'm going to whip him like the dog that he is. He's beating the chicken on the ground. Feathers flying everywhere.
And it was
everywhere.
A real chicken?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
And everybody howled laughing. I spit up my water bottle. Oh, it was crazy. And later on that night, after the show, I get back to the hotel, right? And the bellboy, he usually takes the bags and take them to the hotel. He was running around the parking lot with the same trash bag Uncle Terry had in his hand earlier in the day. And so I was curious, right? So I went over to him and I says, "Hey, kid, are you all right? What's wrong?" And he says, "Some old man gave me this dead chicken, and I don't know what to do with it." It was Terry.
Oh, Lord. I bet it was stinking.
Oh yeah, it was god awful.
All I can say is it was. You know what, Diane and Rob?
Huh?
We've all got stories from the road, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
They're crazy. They're priceless, and some I can't tell. I don't think the Italian stallion would let me. But anyway, it's all good. So Eli, how are you doing tonight? You've been listening very patiently as we've been interviewing the wife of one of the greatest cans in history, Charles Pope. You said you were doing some listening to some songs. What's up with you tonight?
I'm just hanging out. I'll be honest, you caught me off guard because I thought this interview was at 7 p.m. my time. And now I'm over here at 4:30. But it's cool.
Well, I'll tell you what. Now, that gives me an excuse to ask Diane if we could interview her one more time in a week.
Sure,
or two.
You can.
Well, okay.
That'd be fine.
See now, Eli, you came up with the best comment of all, because getting to interview Diane and talk about her wonderful family and friends, it's just great. So now, Diane, do you have another two stories you've got to share? And then I'm going to ask Papa Stro to tell my favorite wrestling story, and I think you'll like it. You know what? I always like, if we have a wonderful guest like you, I always like to entertain them. So all I have to do is get the maestro of wrestling. He's got the best stories, and we'll all laugh. But Diane, do you have two other stories you can share with us?
Well, I have a story about the Tams. They were on their way to Florida, and they had my best friend Beverly with them, and she's a white girl that went with Joe Pope, and when they got pulled over. Because they thought she was Patty Hearst. And that's when they were looking for Patty Hearst. And they locked all of them up in Barnesville, Georgia. And Bill Lowry had to come and get them out of jail because they kept trying to tell them, "We're a singing group. This is not Patty Hearst." And it was Beverly. Of course, they missed their job. Pretty bad story.
I'm sorry for laughing, but
that was
but it's
a true
like,
story too.
That's like the most improbable story in history, and they would mistake her for Patty Hearst.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Well, she had long hair and tall like Patty Hearst, so she kind of looked like Patty Hearst a little bit, but her hair was blonde. I just think it was really probably prejudice.
Well.
Because we had a lot of that back then.
Yeah. Well, the Tams really, how can I put it? The Tams really bridged the gap at a time when we needed for that to happen. And
I think they did too. I really think they don't get the credit that they should have gotten.
Well, we're working on that. So, and do you have one more fun story? Because you've got, over the years, we've had so many fun stories. Do you have one more?
I don't know. I can't think of anything except, you know, one time we were in North Carolina and the Tams were playing in Greensboro, North Carolina, and the Ku Klux Klan surrounded the club and the police had to to follow us all the way to Raleigh, North Carolina. That was bad.
How horrible.
Scary, very scary.
Frightening.
Because the Tams back in, you know, the 60s, right when What Kind of Fool came out, they started playing all white clubs. Their song crossed over to pop charts. So everywhere they played, 90% of their audience was white. Still is.
Yep. Well, they're just a great rhythm and blues band, and they are one of the most revered bands in the world. And you know, Diane, it's wonderful to have been friends with you guys for all these years.
Oh, we love you, John Stamey.
Well, thank you very much. I love you guys too. And we got some work to do, but it's going to be fun work and good work. And we'll tell everybody more about that later. Now, I tell you what, I have asked Maestro to wait till the very end to play to tell my favorite wrestling story, and I hope you'll like it. You know what I really like about tonight is that I've got Diane. I've known you for so long. You're wonderful. Rob Kellum, you have been such a great friend for 6 years, and I've got people that like wrestling. Rob, we got people that like wrestling stories, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh, sure do.
All right, do you mind telling, and you know what my favorite story is, don't you?
If it's the one I'm thinking of.
You know what it is. It's the best wrestling, and we've got to videotape. We've got to recreate this, because this is the most, I'm getting ready to sound like I don't know grammar, but this is about the damn funniest story I ever heard. So, Diane, in honor of you, here is the story of Matt Man.
Okay.
Now, originally this story was told me by the late Roddy Piper, and I really can't do him justice because the way he explained the story is just hilarious. Oh, my gosh. But this was back in the early 70s, the Pacific Northwest, out in Oregon, I believe, and in which they were going to debut this new wrestler on their live TV show by the name of Matt Man, who dressed up like Batman, but due to DC comic book rights and trademarks, they had to call him Matt Man. But he still had the Batman cape and the whole outfit, right? Well, the deal was, during the interview with one of the villain wrestlers, Matt Man was supposed to come out the ringside, jump on top of the table like a superhero and says, "I'm Matt Man," right?
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind, this is really... the early 70s, live TV, there's no 5-second delay or editing. So if you mess up on live TV, you know, oh well, right? What can you do?
Messed up.
So the show starts, and the commentator is interviewing the villain wrestler, right? And here comes Matt Man. The suit, the whole cape and everything, right? Rushes to ringside, right? Jumps on top of the table, slips, falls, busts his rear end on the floor.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, the crowd is howling, right? And the villain wrestler and the commentator look at each other in astonishment. And then the commentator puts his microphone down to the Matt Man, who's all messed up on the floor, and says, "Who are you?" Matt Man is on the floor, and he says, "I'm Matt Man. Tell all your friends."
Oh, Lord.
And later on that night was the debut match of Matt Man, right? So Matt Man comes out with his Batman suit and everything, starts the match off. They go at it, boomity-boom. He slams the guy, climbs to the top rope, extends his hands like he's going to give him a big splash off the top rope, right? But what he didn't realize, there was loose wires protruding from the ceiling of the studio where they were having the show. One of his hands actually touched those wires. Sparks flew, blacks out the whole joint, right? And
oh, Lord.
People were freaking out. About 20 seconds later, the lights come back on, and here's Matt Man on the top rope. He falls to the canvas like one of those trees getting ready to come down from chopping it, right? Boom, right? Missed the guy in the ring completely, right? And the referee, he doesn't know what to do, so he takes the messed up Matt Man, puts him on top of the guy and counts 1, 2, 3. So that was the beginning and the end, literally, of Matt Man.
So did he wrestle anymore?
That was
or try?
Yeah. I believe that was the shocking end, no pun intended.
the shocking end. That's too funny.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Papa Stro, Maestro of Wrestling, you've come through again with the best stories in history about wrestling. And we thank you for being here to make this, you know, because it's so good that Diane and the whole crew of the TAMS love wrestling, and I'm glad we could, you know, provide some good stories. And Diane, it has truly been an honor having you here. I've known
you for quite a while,
and I'd like to ask you back once more.
Okay.
And or as much as you want, and we'll talk about some more stories, because the stories about the TAMS are legendary. They're one of a kind. We are, I would say, in the scope of things, we are in the realm of Queen, Rolling Stones, and Beatles, and the TAMS, because these are the bands that have the great stories that changed lives throughout the world.
Yep. They have some stories.
Am I right, Diane?
You're right.
And I picked the correct names. I picked the four bands who changed everything. And I will go ahead and give props. I'll go ahead and give props to Marvin Gaye. I'll just go ahead and say, you know, between the TAMS, Marvin Gaye, Queen, the Beatles, and the Rolling Stones, I think they formed music in the first 50 years. I know we love Maurice Williams. I know we love Little Richard. I know we love those guys. But these guys that went into the studio and they went out and they performed, I think they did something after the day the music died, after that great plane crash, in 56. I think these were the bands that did it. They created what we call rock and roll today. I don't care if the TAMS are an R&B group. They're a rock and roll band. And they are, in the best sense of all my love, they are a rock and roll band, along with Marvin Gaye, the, you know, Beatles, Rolling Stones, and Queen. I mean, just, you know, they did something no one else did. And yes, I had to leave some people out, but that's okay. So I want to say thank you from the bottom
You're
of my
welcome.
Heart for being here with us tonight, so that we can honor and talk about the history of the TAMS, which is something that we want to do.
I really enjoyed it.
Well, good. And you know what? I'm going to say on behalf of my two buddies, Rob and Eli, hey, Rob, was it good having Diane here?
Rob done gone to sleep.
Rob, he might have lost his connection. Eli, was it good having Diane?
Oh yeah,
here?
It was a blast. Oh yeah.
Hey, look,
I love your stories.
Look, and we love you, and so we'll get you back. I'll schedule because I want to do a couple more, because the TAMS need for people to find out how great they were.
We're still around.
Number one, you're still around, but you're still singing my favorite song, "Hey Girl, Don't Bother Me." So I have I have a vested interest in this. It's like when I go see my friends who have the Bigfoot clan behind their house, and they have a couple of, they have like 11 dogs, and there are these three dogs that have attached themselves to me. And it's like,
oh Lord,
I gotta go there and see them to give them some. I got to give them some treats. I mean, otherwise, who else is going to give them treats? Well, so, Diane, thank you so much. I will
do
the call around after the show.
Okay.
Thank you very much, ladies and
gentlemen.
You're welcome. It's good to see you. We'll be here next time. And all hail the TAMS. Cheers.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
I love y'all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.